Going red. David asked God, would you let me build this tabernacle? And God said, no. But I will allow your son, Solomon, to do so. So, yeah, I know, but it's being recorded. I'm sorry. So they built the temple. And these items were transferred from the tabernacle to the temple. Fast forward another about 1,200 years, and you're in the day that Jesus walked the earth. Jesus walked in Jerusalem. The temple was there. And inside this temple was at least, perhaps, and I'm not sure how many of these articles that's inside the original tabernacle had survived to that point. I'm not, maybe the answer is in the scriptures. If it is, I'm not sure where. But maybe some had survived, maybe some had not. But they still offered sacrifices in this temple. And on the day that Jesus was crucified, something spectacular happened. There was a great, or I'll just say just an earthquake. And it seems to me, and it seems to indicate that at the moment that Jesus died, this earthquake shook the place, shook the area, shook the land. And several other things happened as a result of this earthquake, several spectacular things. Can you name one? Rip the veil. Can you name another? Darkness. Did I hear someone say darkness was on the earth? What? Graves erupted. People came from the grave. Now, I'll tell you, I set a trap for you. Y'all just walked right in. I made this statement that several other things happened as a result of this earthquake. These things were not a result of the earthquake. Thank you. I was waiting for somebody to.
The tabernacle fell?
No. Okay. These things happened, but the earthquake did not cause them. Right? Earthquakes don't cause darkness at noon, the noonday. Earthquakes don't cause graves to open and people to come to life out of the graves. Earthquakes don't cause curtains to split. Curtains are pretty limber things. All right, now this curtain is pretty heavy, but still it's got some flexibility to it. All right. At this time that Jesus died, that veil was ripped from top to bottom. There's a reason for that. There's a significance to that. Because that area in the Holy of Holies, which had been forbidden to the Jewish people. In fact, the priests could only go there once a year and then with fear and trembling. It had been off limits because of the holiness of that place. It is opened up. And this whole system has been done away with. This whole system, which was but a shadow, has now realized the body of that shadow. We're fixing to sing a song. I told you this is, our sermon is going to be intermixed. This is part of it. You just went through part of the sermon. We're going to sing a song. It's called Nobody Like You. We know the song here. Don't you look at the words. This song is a song of worship to God. As you read these words, I hope that they can be an expression of your heart. Let's read. Lord of all, I bow down at your feet. Okay, now I don't want to ask us to bow down. Somebody had to help me get up. All right? But at least in your heart, in your mind, we bow in reverence before God Almighty. And there's certainly nothing wrong with doing it physically and literally as well. All to you, back up there, all to you, Lord, I give all of me. Next slide. My soul longs to behold who you are. I wish that that was a true and accurate expression of my heart, that my soul would constantly long to know who God is. And why does the next phrase, he says, veil is torn. This longing that I have can be realized because this veil in this tabernacle is opened up. It's torn. As we sing the song, worship with us. Whose glass? Is your glass?
Thank you.
You would have been like...
Yeah, man. I guarantee I would have been. Exodus chapter 26. We're going to read this text this time. Exodus chapter 26.
Is your mic on, Bill?
Yes, it is. One out of two ain't bad, is it? Exodus chapter 26. This chapter, it's going to be one of those chapters as you read it that you tend to start kind of going, nodding off and waking up. It's a lot of stuff here that seems to all run together after a little bit. And I'm not able, first of all, to... I was wishing last week as John was preaching, I was wishing, thinking about my text for today, I was wishing that I had a marker board and knew exactly how, or a program or something where as he reads this that I could build it. You know, I could draw it and build the thing so we could see how it was done. The main problem with that is I'm not sure. I can't put it all together as to what means what is what and where it was located on the tabernacle and on the boards and those kinds of things. But I have learned this, that if you read this thing enough, and I'm talking about read this chapter, you're going to read this chapter about 30 times, it'll start kind of falling into place a little bit. Okay, for me, I think it'll take more about 70 or 80, but... It's better than it was. All right, so let's read it. Moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains. It's the first thing we got is 10 curtains. Of fine woven linen and blue, purple, and scarlet thread. With artistic designs of cherubim, you shall weave them. So he tells you you're going to make 10 curtains. You're going to weave this linen cloth together with blue, purple, and scarlet thread. And in the weaving of it is going to be designs made. Now, we make designs in our clothes all the time. I've got designs in my shirt. Most of you have designs somewhere on your clothing, how it is woven in. And that's the way this was to be. Blue, purple, and scarlet thread with designs woven in these 10 curtains. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits. Now, let me put it this way. 28 cubits is about 47 feet. Now, this was the length of the tabernacle. Remember last week, we talked about, or 4 weeks ago, we talked about, or maybe 2 weeks ago, at some point in the last few weeks, talked about the size of the tabernacle. And I told you, it helped me to realize, that, as John brought out, that the tabernacle, the thing we're fixing to describe right here, could fit in this room. It's 15 foot wide, this room, if I remember correctly, is 32 foot. The building's 32 foot wide. So it could take up half the width of this room inside here. It was going to be 47 or 45 foot long, which is about the length of this room. Not this room is about 50, a little over 50 foot long, I believe. So it's half the width, the full length of this room, and it was about 15 foot tall, which is about the peak of our ceiling. So you kind of get an idea of the size. And while we're at it, We want to orient ourselves. The tabernacle had to sit with north a certain direction, with west a certain direction. And then we're going to say for sake of ease that in our room, north is that way. Okay, it's probably a little bit that way, but let's say north is this way. So, of course, south is this way, east is this way, west is that way. So as we come through here and he starts talking about these directions, we're going to know where we're at. Okay, the Holy of Holies, that inner place that was behind that veil, is going to be on that end of our tabernacle, of our building. Okay, so let's continue reading. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits, 47 feet, and the width of each curtain, 4 cubits, which is 80 inches. That's the standard height of an interior door. Those doors back there are 80 inches tall. So you've got this curtain that is 47 foot long and 80 inches tall. That's one curtain. You're going to have 10 of those things. Okay. 5 curtains, verse 3, shall be coupled to one another. And the other 5 curtains shall be coupled to one another. Now, the first thing I don't understand here is coupled how? Are they coupled end to end where they're all 80 inches tall but 5 times 47 feet long? Are they coupled that way, end to end? Are they coupled on top of one another where they're 47 feet long but 80 inches times 10 tall? Or are they coupled together like this, where they're 47 feet long, 80 inches tall, and 10 of them stacked together like a deck of cards? I think that's how it was, but I'm not positive. Okay, verse 4, and you shall make loops of blue yarn on the edge of the curtain on the selvage of one set, and likewise you shall do on the outer edge of the other curtain of the second set. 50 loops you shall make in one curtain, and 50 loops you shall make on the edge of the curtain that is on the end of the second set, that the loops may be clasped to one another. You shall make 50 clasps of gold, and couple the curtains together with the clasp, so that it may be one tabernacle. So that last phrase gives me the idea that this is going to complete the perimeter of this tabernacle, our tabernacle building, in some way. You shall also make curtains of goat's hair to be a tent over the tabernacle. That gives us the idea that the next thing he's going to describe is the roof. What we've just talked about are the walls. Now we're going to talk about the roof. Verse 7. I'm going to read this again. You shall also make curtains of goat's hair to be a tent over the tabernacle. You shall make 11 curtains. First time was 10, now it's 11. The length of each curtain shall be 30 cubits, which is about 50 feet. That's 2 or 3 feet longer than the walls. Usually a roof is longer than walls, right? And the width of each curtain, 4 cubits, which again is 80 inches. And the 11 curtains shall all have the same measurements. Now notice verse 9. You shall couple 5 curtains by themselves and 6 curtains by themselves. You shall double over the 6th curtain at the forefront of the tent. So in some way, the 6th curtain is used to lap over to make the seam. Double the seam where it closes the joint together there. Verse 10, you shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in one set, and 50 loops on the edge of the curtain of the second set. You shall make 50 bronze clasps, put the clasp into the loops, and couple the tent together, that it may be one. There again, that phrase tends to signify that this completes it. Verse 12, the remnant that remains of the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that remains, shall hang over the back of the tabernacle. And a cubit on one side and a cubit on the other side of what remains of the length of the curtains of the tent shall hang over the sides of the tabernacle on this side and on that side to cover it. You shall also make a covering of ram skins dyed red for the tent, and a covering of badger skins above that. And for the tabernacle you shall make the boards of acacia wood, standing upright. So here we're talking about some boards. They're standing upright around this tabernacle. 10 cubits shall be the length of a board. 10 cubits is about 16 2/3 feet. And a cubit and a half shall be the width of each board. That's a 30-inch wide board. Pretty good sized board, isn't it? Verse 17, 2 tenons shall be in each board for binding one to another. Thus you shall make for all the boards of the tabernacle. And you shall make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side. So 20 boards, 30-inch wide boards is 50 feet. So you got that south side. Remember where our south side is? It's over here. So we got the south side boards made. You shall make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under each of the boards for its 2 tenons. For the second side of the tabernacle, the north side, which would be over here, right? There shall be 20 boards, and there are 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under each of the boards. For the far side of the tabernacle westward, that would be that end down there, you shall make 6 boards. 6 of these 30-inch boards is 15 foot wide, which was the width of the tabernacle. You shall also make 2 boards for the 2 back corners of the tabernacle. Now, what do you reckon these 2 boards are for? To join the corners, to make the corners. Notice the next verse, verse 24. They shall be coupled together at the bottom and the top, together at the top by one ring. Thus it shall be for both of them. They shall be for the 2 corners. Verse 25, so there shall be 8 boards with their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under each of the boards. And you shall make bars of acacia wood, 5 bars, 5 for the boards on one side of the tabernacle, 5 bars for the boards on the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards on the side of the tabernacle for the far side westward. The middle bar, so you got these 5 bars, I assume, are going to go horizontally holding these boards together. The middle bar, he says, shall pass through the midst of the boards from end to end. You shall overlay the boards with gold, make their rings of gold as holders for the bars, and overlay the bars with gold. There's quite a bit of gold in it. You shall raise up the tabernacle according to its pattern which you were shown on the mountain. I like this verse, because this gives me an idea that this isn't what we're reading in these 37 verses or so. It's not all the instructions that Moses got. When he was on the mountain, this verse seems to indicate that you're going to build it exactly like the pattern that I showed you when you're on the mountain. So this is not all Moses is getting. It may be all we're getting. That's not all Moses got. Verse 31, you shall make a veil woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread and fine woven linen. It shall be woven with an artistic design of cherubim. So here we have the same idea, a veil. The first time it was called a curtain. This time we're calling it a veil. But it has a design woven into it with these 3 colored fabric. You shall hang it upon the 4 pillars of acacia wood. I'm in verse 32. Overlaid with gold. Their hooks shall be gold upon 4 sockets of silver. You shall hang the veil from the clasp. Then you shall bring the ark of the testimony in there behind the veil. The veil shall be a divider for you between the holy place and the most holy. Now you see what's happened? He's made this veil. He said you bring it in, and I don't know if we have, apparently we don't have a slide. You place that veil there. You saw the picture we had earlier. Place it there. Is it there now? Place it there, and it's between the most holy on the left end and the holy place on the right end. And it separates you from the most holy place, which is has some very stringent rules in the way they could conduct themselves. You shall put the mercy seat upon the Ark of the Covenant in the most holy place. You shall set the table outside the veil, the lampstand across from the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south. So, we've got the candlestand that sits on the south wall. The table of showbread sits on the north side, north wall. And he says, you shall, verse 36, you shall make a screen for the door of the tabernacle woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread and fine woven linen made by a weaver. You shall make for the screen 5 pillars of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Their hooks shall be gold, and you shall cast 5 sockets of bronze for them. And we'll stop at that point in reading our text. But you remember, we talked about this briefly 4 weeks ago. Now, have you ever heard a sermon where they read the text, and then that's the last you hear about the text? You're not supposed to do that. But I'm going to do it today. Okay? So you can leave here and you can say, that guy read that chapter and then he didn't even mention it again. And please also tell him I told you I wasn't going to mention it again. All right? We're not coming back to that. But you get the idea of kind of what the thing perhaps would look like when it was built. Now, 4 weeks ago, we talked about a few things. Where'd all this stuff come from? They've got oodles and gobs of gold. Where did that come from? Remember what happened? God told them, when you leave Egypt, I'm going to put it upon the Egyptians' heart to give you gold and silver and all this precious stuff. The Egyptian people loaded them up with valuable stuff. And now we know why. God had it planned all along. This is for the tabernacle. And now they know as well. We talked about 4 weeks ago the idea that some people have, even Christian people, of why waste all of this valuable stuff on this? Remember we see that in the New Testament. Judas Iscariot asked, why was this valuable ointment poured upon your Jesus' feet? Why was it instead not sold and the money given to the poor? We talked about that a little bit. Everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. And if you tend to have the idea that God is not worthy of possessing everything, you might need to get over it. He's not going to ask you. He's not going to ask me. Lastly, we talked about 4 weeks ago just the symbolism. What does this symbolize? Now, unless things have changed since the last month, the things they symbolized a month ago, they still symbolize. Okay, so it's hard for me to give you something new. All right, they still symbolize the same thing. This tabernacle still symbolizes what it symbolizes. I want to talk to you, man. We talked about this 4 weeks ago, about shadows. Shadows, we talk about, the New Testament talks about some of the things in the Old Testament were shadows of things to come. A shadow is created by an object. And shadows are always inferior to the object that makes them. Yesterday afternoon, I was there mowing the church yard and mowing back right over in that area. I was mowing along, and all of a sudden, I saw this shadow come from behind me. I was mowing along this way, and the shadow starts coming from behind me and hits the ground beside my mower and gets on my mower. And instinctively, what do I think? I think there's something coming up behind me. I mean, you know how thoughts can run through your head so fast? I think a big truck. You know, what is it? And I almost had time to do like that because the shadow's coming. But I didn't have time to do it because, you know, the shadow's a little quicker than I am. And the shadow came on, and it was the shadow of a buzzard that was flying overhead. He got just right and made a shadow there. That shadow was nothing. It was caused by something. This tabernacle is a shadow. I want you to look at the beauty. Of course, that doesn't look very, very pretty because the resolution, all that good stuff. But think of the things that God put into this tabernacle. The beautiful colors woven into those curtains. Everything overlaid with pure gold. And yet all of this glory is but a shadow. What is it a shadow of? It's a shadow in a way, perhaps, of Jesus. Let me tell you more, in my mind, a more applicable shadow. It's a shadow of you. It's a shadow of God's people. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19 and 20, I'm going to read this. I know you know the verses. Or do you not know? He says that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you. And you are not your own. Did you get all of that? Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you? And you are not your own. You are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Let me tell you something. The glory that we see in that tabernacle is magnificent. But it is only a shadow of the real thing. I'll tell you what this suggests to me. It suggests to me that you have great value. Much greater than this shadow. God has created you and saved you, and when He saved you, you became the dwelling place of the Most High God. And your worth to God is far more than this tabernacle ever will be. It's like two sides of the same coin. You are of great value. This shadows your worth. But on the other side of that coin is this, that your body is a temple of God. It is the dwelling place of the Spirit of God. And it ought to be made a proper place for God. You ought to treat your body, treat your soul, treat your spirit, give effort to working at your spirit that it may be a proper dwelling place for God. Now let's think about something else. Children of Israel made this a portable tabernacle. They took it apart and they would go across the wilderness. And as they went, their reputation went before them. The nations that they came across and came upon and were coming upon, how did they think about these people coming? They were scared to death. Why is that? Because they had heard, and listen to how I'm saying this, it's not because they had heard how mighty these people were. It was because they had heard how great and mighty their God was. It was their God that they feared. Now let's make a little application. Let me make this sentence, this statement. God has called you. God has called me to do more than just survive. I don't maybe putting you guys on the spot, and I may be totally wrong. I don't mind you correcting me. But I suspect that when some of the guys come into the other side for the first time, they are just like some of the people who come to church every Sunday. Their heart is not in it. They're coming to stay out of jail. They're coming to because they're at their last straw. They're coming just because there's nothing else to do. And I don't know this to be true because I'm not sure how your program is set up. But I know this to be true in the church. That the more a person is challenged to commit their life to Jesus Christ, the more that they see the cost of being a disciple of Jesus Christ, the more it separates the wheat from the chaff. The more is revealed that someone's heart is really not there. Some of you, when you came there, you may have been just trying to survive. There are some people in our church today who are hurting, who have problems, whose spirit is in turmoil. Several people. And it seems that they have a hard time doing more in their Christian walk than just surviving. They're carried about and downstream by the current of a raging river. God has called us to do more than just that. I want to ask you a question. What is it, and when is it, that society will respect the Church of Jesus Christ? What is it that causes society to respect the Church of Jesus Christ? I'll tell you what I think. It is when the church becomes righteous. So when the church's heart is given to pursuing righteousness. Jay talked about earlier the result of some of the guys that go through this program is there is an army. There are people coming out of there who are committed, and they are zealous, and they are bold. That's what we're talking about. Not just surviving, but pushing the kingdom of God forward. Righteousness. Being concerned about righteousness. I'll tell you something, the last few days has got my dandruff up. I know it's got some of your dandruff up because you've told me about it. That's this mask deal. That's this whole deal about the coronavirus and all that kind of stuff. It's got me about worked up. Now, I had the thought last night. I know this thought came from God, because I'd never have such a thought on my own. My thought was this. If I was as bent out of shape as I am about wearing a mask or not wearing a mask or 6 foot and all this kind of stuff, if I was as worried and as bent out of shape as I am about all that stuff, what would my life be like? if I was that bent out of shape about unrighteousness in me. How would I be different if the Christian church was as concerned about unholiness within their own soul as we are these things? Maybe the world would listen. Maybe they would. We may face a revolution in our country. I don't know. We might. We may face a real choice. I mean a real choice between fighting for liberty, fighting for freedom, and surrendering religious freedoms. We may face that real choice. And I'll guarantee you this. The line between the two will be intentionally blurry. It will be hard to distinguish where one stops and another begins. We're going to sing one more song, if the worship team would come up. I'll talk to you about this song as well. Most of you know this. If you're here, you've heard this song. We've sung it before. God has called us. God has called His people to be salt to this earth, to be the conscience of a nation. And we have to pursue righteousness within our own soul in order to do that. Conrad, can you show us the first slide there? I want you to watch the words or listen to the words of this song. God has placed a watchman, that's you and that's me, on your walls, O Jerusalem. They will not be silent day or night. The church cannot afford to be silent. It may be easy. It may be comfortable. It may help us avoid trouble. But we cannot afford to righteously please God and be silent. Day or night of the Lord they make constant mention. They will give no sleep to their eyes until God establishes grace. There will be no peace in their nights until the Lord makes Jerusalem a praise. He has sworn it by His strength. And then we'll go to the chorus. It says, if you lift up your voices and call on the Lord, He will come. Now, don't you notice this phrase? And the nations will see that salvation comes from Zion. That's what I would like to see. That the world may know that their salvation, my salvation, does not come from me. Does not come from this organization, but it comes from Zion. It comes from God. Let's go to the next slide. This is the slide I want you to see. Behold, the Lord has proclaimed this to the ends of the earth. And though there's fear in your streets tonight, something is already birthed. Now notice this next phrase, tabernacle. This seems like an odd phrase, doesn't it? Tabernacle is rising right now in the hearts of those who believe. If you are a child of God, God is already at work, not because of the circumstances in which we live, but because He has sovereignly saved your soul. God is at work making for Himself a tabernacle within your soul. Tabernacle is rising right now in the hearts of those who believe. There's the sound of a freedom shout rising up from under your feet. We're going to sing the song. When we get to that phrase, there's a sound of a freedom shout. We cut it off, and it's staccatoed, and we want it to be loud. Okay? That word shout kind of implies that, doesn't it? Freedom shout. Let's hear that word shout when we get there, can you? All right, let's all stand.